from the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's time zones, prolific as they may be, all of them covered by this program, Coast to Coast AM, weekend version. I'm Mark Bell. It is my pleasure and honor to support you intellectually through the weekend, beginning this night in the next hour with one of our nation's leading theoretical physicists, a man searching, the co-founder of string theory and a man searching for the answer to everything. That expression of math, perhaps about the size of your thumb, that would explain everything, literally everything, Dr. Michio Kaku. He is something you don't want to miss. All right. So we've got a bit of an hour here to fool with, and we'll do open lines and note a few things for you. Number one, the picture on my webcam tonight was taken yesterday morning, actually early yesterday afternoon, now I know for many of you, you will laugh. You will think this silly, but not here. Not where I am in the desert. You've got to remember I'm, about 20 miles or so from Death Valley? Well, we don't get snow here. Snow is something that little children run out and amaze at because they've never seen it before in the desert, this part of the desert. But lo and behold, I awaken to a white blanket. Pointing it at the house next door, you'll see what it looked like. Midday, unheard of. In fact, amazing. And part, of course, of the slam dunking the entire West is getting right now, as storm after storm after storm, some of them combining into the somewhat less than perfect storm, and just dumping water and moisture on the West. God knows we need it, but as usual with so many things, it does not need to come all at once, and if it's so desired, it could take a break of a day or two. I mean, we have seen nothing but clouds and rain and clouds and rain and snow and rain and wind. So a day or two of the sun coming out in the desert would be refreshingly normal. Other than that, I also want to mention many of you were intrigued, a few bored to death when I played the Spearcom tapes on Halloween. Well, my friend Brendan Cook, who collects EVP, electronic voice phenomena, and comes on this show and astounds me constantly with what he has, Brendan and Barbara, have posted the full, and he's the guy who turned me on to the Spearcom tapes in the first place, the work of one George Meeks, and a two-way communication with somebody on the other side. It's an amazing thing to listen to, and I know it's hard to listen to. They were using certain tones that were then modulated from the other side or by somebody on the other side, and they have posted on their website, which is ghostpix.com, that's ghostpix.com, the entire Spearcom tapes. So if you were intrigued by what you heard, and it is amazing, you've got to listen very carefully, but what you hear will, I guarantee, will stand your hair on end. I guarantee. So ghostpix.com has it, the whole thing. The United States military said that it dropped a 500-pound bomb on the wrong house outside the northern city of Mosul on Saturday, and five people are dead. The man who owned the house said, well, you can imagine he wasn't happy at all. He said the bomb killed 14, and an Associated Press photographer said seven of those were children. And I don't know, there's a big debate going on right now about how we're doing in Iraq. How do you think we're doing in Iraq? Are we winning? Or if we're not winning, if we're sort of in a status quo situation, then are we losing? Or are we getting rid of would-be terrorists or current terrorists, those who would attack us later? People say that. And that could well be true. Rescue workers pulled thousands more more rotting corpses that would be from the mud and the debris of flattened towns along the Sumatran coast on Saturday, 2 weeks after the terrible tsunami. The death toll now is beyond the estimated, usually these estimates are high. The UN estimated 150,000. They've already gone well over that, and they're still pulling bodies out. About 100 people, including some who spent more than 12 hours stuck in deep snow in the San Bernardino Mountains, were rescued Saturday as the latest in a series of storms struck California. Storms quickly moved eastward, closing all three major highways over the Sierra Nevada. Up to 10 feet was expected over the weekend at the Sierra's higher elevations, according to others in the service. Earlier, my wife said that they got another, 3 feet or something in Reno on top of what they already had. Reno is buried. It's buried in snow. No question about it. In a moment, we'll have more news. We'll get to the phones shortly.
You're old.
Other news, I think, important to note, a U.S. nuclear submarine ran aground about 350 miles off the Pacific Ocean territory of Guam. There were about 20 injuries, one of them apparently critical, according to the Navy. And according to a petty officer, there was no damage to the nuclear reactor that powers the U.S. San Francisco. That was the one that went aground in the accident that occurred noon Saturday Guam time. They say the Los Angeles-class sub was able to resurface and head back to its base in Guam, where it was scheduled to arrive on Monday, so I guess all is well. 2004 was one of the warmest, wettest, most violent years in the history of weather forecasting. This according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And this is, by the way, data that goes back to 1895. As predicted in global warming models, Arctic temperatures rose most dramatically, with an approximate 1.8 degree Fahrenheit increase in Alaska above the 71 to 2000 average. Alaska had a record warm summer, with temperatures averaging 4.6 degrees Fahrenheit above average. Had late summer not been cooler than average across much of the Midwest, 2004 could have been a record year all the way around. And I got this from somebody named RJ. RJ says, "Hey, Art, it's been a long time since I've written an email to you, but today I thought I'd share this with you. I work in the Arctic on the Prudhoe Bay oil field. Now, I've been up here for about 3 years, and what I've learned during those 3 years is that this place is unforgiving during January. Oh, baby, I know. It is. The cold, he says, during this time of year normally can freeze exposed flesh in minutes, actually seconds. Today, the only thing I saw frozen solid were the faces of the old-timers who've been here for a number of years, wondering why it could possibly be raining on January 7th in the Arctic. Temperatures this year have been considerably warmer than usual, but rain in January? Strange indeed, RJ." Way up there. And, oh, RJ, you are so right. What's going on at the top and, I might add, bottom of the world is inescapable. And then this, related, Brazil has so few tornadoes, it doesn't even have any equipment to forecast them. They simply don't expect them in Brazil. But guess what? A town of 180,000 got hit with two of them on Monday in parts of Alaska. It is strangely, very strangely warm, they note in this article. So warm, the annual winter dog weight pulling contest in south central Alaska has now been canceled because of not enough snow. Icebergs have been seen now in the waters of New Zealand for the first time since 1940. 48. And if you listen every weekend, I try and chronicle much of what's going on with the climate, and I've got a whole lot more here. By the way, this is one story you might not have heard with regard to the tsunami. I find this amazing, but apparently true. A veteran surfer has told how he was forced to ride that towering tsunami to save his life as it engulfed an idyllic Sri Lankan village. Martin Hambrook, 40 years of age, from South Wales, was, it seems, in the sea off the island's northern coast, waiting for what he hoped would be the perfect wave. His partner, Vicky Maxwell, 42, and son, Jai, 7, were watching from the beach as the horrific form of the tsunami appeared on the horizon. So there it was, behind their friend building. And, of course, he didn't see it. The family of three fly to Sri Lanka every year, and they were staying at the Hansa Surf Lodge in Hikkaduwa, I think that's how you pronounce it, when the giant wave hit on Boxing Day. His partner and son were forced to flee to the safety of their nearby hotel balcony and then watch in horror as the waves scooped them up. It was, quoting now, the surfer, that is, "It was really terrible, because I was surfing on a wave I wasn't supposed to be on," Mr. Hambrook told Wales on Sunday. Newspaper that did this exclusive interview, he said, "As an experienced surfer, when I saw the wave come, I realized something was very wrong, but I couldn't escape because the surfboard was tied to my ankle." Despite the ferocity of the wave, believe it or not, he stayed on his board as he was carried over the sandy beach right up to the hotel. He jumped off in the restaurant as the sea withdrew and a second wave about 10 meters high rolled in. The family then all fled to higher ground. All three did survive the devastation, which has claimed thousands of lives, and have opted to stay on the island to help local people clear wreckage and so forth. But I mean, that's the truth. That guy surfed the tsunami in, saving his own life. Sounds like an urban legend, doesn't it? But it's a legit news service, so apparently a legit story. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good evening or morning or something. Hello?
Yes?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I was calling to, it's more of a question than a story. I'm an amateur recording engineer, and I was recording a band one time, and I was using a digital 16-track recorder, and once everything was all finished and mixed and everything like that, at the very beginning of one of the songs, there was a weird voice.
Huh.
And my question is about EVP. The voice is actually coming in backwards. And backwards voices, when you're recording with analog,
yes,
is fairly common because, you know, on the other side of the tape, you know, it'll play back backwards.
That's
but on
right.
a digital recorder,
yes, it's
was very quite odd, and also
very odd.
It was the voice of a female, and it wasn't the voice. You know, the only females around for the recording was my wife and the girlfriend of one of the band members. And the
yes,
drummer,
sir. Well, were you able? Sir, hold on. Take a pause. Were you able to make it? In other words, if it was backwards digitally, it would be easy to turn it around and listen to what was said. Could you do that?
Yeah, and it almost, my name's Lee, and it almost sounds like it says, "Help me, Lee."
Really?
Yes, I just wonder if anybody that knows about EVP has ever known of instances of it coming in backwards.
Yes, the answer is a clear, unambiguous yes. Those things do happen. EVP, I think, is perhaps one of the greatest proofs of the afterlife there is. There are anecdotal stories that you hear from people that have crossed over to the other side, the typical white light, the tunnel, the whole thing, right? But EVP is something that you can control. In other words, you can exercise controls in the science of trying to collect these voices. You can make very sure If you're using old analog tape, that it was a brand new tape, absolutely empty. If you're using digital equipment, you can be absolutely sure of what you're doing and the authenticity of what you're receiving. And after having listened to how much now EVP, I guess I've been doing years of EVP, I conclude that I first of all, I don't see fraud. Definitely do not see fraud. It appears to be contemporary communication. In other words, in many, if not the majority of cases, what's said on the EVP recording is meant to be digested or is a direct communication to the person attempting to get the EVP. So it is one of the best proofs, I believe, of the possibility of life existing elsewhere and modulating their voice into our modern world. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
This is Stephen from Columbus, Georgia, listening to you on WDAK AM.
Welcome.
Just wanted to call and ask. Well, by the way, I hope you and your wife had a wonderful holiday season.
'Twas jolly indeed.
And Happy New Year to you, sir. I was just wondering, since you're a techno freak, did you visit the Las Vegas Consumer Electronics Show?
No. I have many friends who are there at the show now, and I'm expecting visitors on Monday if the 45-mile-an-hour winds and driving rain doesn't keep them away. Otherwise, I'm expecting to see them on Monday. I have a very bad back, and I love going to those shows, but you know what they are. If you've
it's
ever
a lot been, of walking.
Man, you walk and you walk and you walk and you walk, and then by the end of the show, you have two bags full of brochures, and now you weigh 20 pounds more than you did when you started.
Same as the SHOT Show there in February every year.
Yeah, that's right.
Just want to tell you that here in Columbus, Georgia, for the past 9 days, we have had temperatures above 70 degrees. And our normal high should be in the neighborhood of 54 to 56.
Right.
And it's incredible. I mean, you know, people are wearing sandals and shorts here now.
Well, it's changing everywhere. Thank you very much. And as I mentioned here, we're being inundated. I wonder if perhaps the desert is in the process of rejecting its desertness. In other words, I wonder. I mean, pretty soon, the amount of water we're getting is reaching down to seeds that have not germinated, I'm sure, since dinosaurs tromped around the earth. And if this keeps up, they're going to grow. And I have no idea what will come out of this stuff we call, well, this dirt, if you want to call it. It's not really dirt. It's more like baby powder. One of my neighbors describes our dirt as more like baby powder. And you can imagine what that does when it gets wet. But deep down, way deep down, in areas that haven't seen water perhaps in thousands of years, lay seeds of, well, who knows. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
My name is Wade. I'm calling from Louisiana, Kentucky.
Welcome.
Okay. The reason I'm calling you is to let you know and the audience know out there of a potential serious problem that may be about to develop very soon in the Middle East involving Russia and Israel.
Oh?
Yeah, it's reported in the Israeli press earlier this week that a special meeting was convened by Ariel Sharon and his top military and intelligence leaders.
Yes.
And that, I'll read the three paragraphs. It was a very short...
No, don't do that. Just tell me what the conclusion is.
That the sources are told this is it was a highly classified problem. They were sworn to secrecy, but that the relationship between Russia and Israel is now at a crisis. And that after the meeting, the statements made by the Sharon's office that the meeting was held because of statements made that were considered anti-Semitic nature was partial and tendidious, you know.
You're saying that the Russians made anti-Semitic comments of some kind and that strained relations to the point that they're going to have conflict? Is that what I'm getting?
That was the official reason, but the sources who told the Israeli newspaper that was actually a cover, that the real reason is being kept secret, and that Sharon has ordered it concealed for at this time. and that it's but it is very serious, and it seems to imply that Putin has made some threats towards Israel.
Well, you know, you wouldn't think they would act on just something that the Russians had said. Sticks and stones will break your bones, but nuclear bombs will rock your world every time.
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from East of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From West of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
In about a half hour, we're to be honored with one of the brightest men on the planet. One of the brightest men on the planet. That's quite a guest to have, Dr. Michio Kaku. And remember I told you as an amateur radio operator, we've been having big disturbances, unusual ionospheric disturbances, and then here comes this story. Sudden ionospheric disturbances. It says there have been some episodes over the past week, only week here, of some very strange sudden ionospheric disturbances, or SIDs. Now, these have not been caused by solar flares or anything like that, but rather by GRBs, gamma ray bursts, from very distant objects, like several hundred light years away. And then I ran into another story appearing to suggest, well, here's the headline, immense space explosion discovered, shapes of nebula. Robotica and some of the other stories. Anyway, the Chandra X-ray Observatory discovers the largest known explosion of immense size in space involving supermassive black holes. Scientists have observed, I'll just read a little bit of this, the largest explosion in space, a finding that suggests that supermassive black holes, which produced the blast, are a bigger force to be reckoned with in the universe than previously thought. Scientists always put things that way when they're surprised. Than previously thought is a much used phrase. But I guess in this one, I'm not sure what we're talking about. The collision of two black holes? Is that what it is? That will be a question for Dr. Kaku. again back to all of you. First time caller line, you're on the air. Cheers.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hi.
When you mentioned the story about the AP reporter suggesting that maybe five children had been killed in the bombing.
Yes.
In Iraq.
Yes.
I got the idea to call because one of my nearest and dearest friends and oldest friends is an agent for Project Blackwater. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
Nope.
Well, it's a security company. It's a private organization that contracts out to the government and does ambassador detail, amongst other operations in war zones. He was had 60-day leave just last month, and I managed to talk to him. And he said that during the last month of his time there, that he had to battle every day, and that he was actually having to kill women and children because they were fighting back.
Yeah, I know.
He probably had to kill 20 or 30 of them. In the last month that he was there.
There was a big article in The Economist recently, you might want to look it up, about, you know, the state of affairs now in Iraq. And, you know, I hate to do it because everybody, I guess, does it, but it's impossible not to see the incredible parallels between what's going on in Iraq now and what went on in Vietnam. We're fighting an enemy who's hidden. We're fighting women, sometimes children, people with a dedicated cause, which in this case, I guess, is our death, and it just seems so much like Vietnam.
Absolutely, and I can't see any way out, you know, for us in the short term, unfortunately.
I certainly also do not see the exit strategy, and you know that was supposed to be the big lesson of Vietnam, that before you engage in any military adventure, you manage to see the end of it as well as the beginning of it.
That's true. You know, those of us that don't pay attention to our history lessons are doomed to repeat them, eh?
But so quickly.
I know. It's every day I'm completely flabbergasted by the amount of difficult stories that are coming out of the situation. And to hear firsthand from my own friend who, by his own hand, had to take these lies, it's very heart-wrenching, you know?
Yes, it is. And as I would like to recommend to you, the rest of you, the article in The Economist, if I can dig it out. That's going to take a little bit of digging, but it was a really good article. So let me see if I can find it. I think I probably can. I'm trying to keep pretty close track of what's going on in Iraq, and that's not easy to do. Anyway, it's here somewhere. It's here somewhere. Very, very good. About an 8-page article in The Economist, or at least it'll print out as 8 pages if you print it out. And, well, it's just as well I didn't find it because there was a lot of language used in it, in eyewitnesses, you know, describing what's going on in Iraq. And it's a place where you don't know exactly who your enemy is. It's a place where people are laying bombs that are set off by cell phones. And clearly we have an inspired enemy that we're fighting there. And it gives me little chills to see the parallels. And I'm sorry, but I do see them. I know it's a worn thing, but there are parallels to Vietnam. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bell. How are you doing this evening?
Quite well. Where are you?
I'm calling from Kentucky.
Yes, sir.
And our weather here is about 20 degrees above where it should. Normally, we're running in the neighborhood of the 30s or the high 20s, something like that. Right now, for the next couple of days, we're going to have weather in the 60s and 50s. And I've looked a week ahead in the weather forecast, and on Friday, it's supposed to drop down into the normal area for this temperature zone.
All right.
To drop down to about 27 degrees. And what I was wondering is, if maybe around the country, the listeners could watch and see what their weather does over the next 7 days. For example, if the weather is, let's say, 20 degrees below where it should, see how it stays there over the next week. And if the temperature goes high where it's supposed to be high on Friday and goes low where it's supposed to go low on Friday, then there may be a connection.
Well,
but there seems to be a pattern between cold places being warm and warm places being cold.
There does, but we're looking at macro changes in the weather here, sir, and I'm not, you know, even though I screech and moan about the blustery, windy, wet, even snowy, unusual conditions here in the desert. Oh, man, it's been miserable. It's still a micro look at anything and may not by itself mean anything. However, if, as the caller suggested, people begin exchanging information and over a long period of time detect a profound change, well, even then, it's still basically at the macro level. Our climate is a very complex mechanism that is not altogether understood at all, and so for it to do anything at any given time is sort of possible. But, you know, over the longer period, I think we are seeing changes. Again, that's very difficult for any human being in any point of a given human lifespan to make a judgment about, but it seems that way. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art. This is Neil in New Kent, Virginia.
Yes, yes, Neil.
Listener. I just have a little article here about how the quake affected well water in Virginia. And it was just kind of amazing that an earthquake on the other side of the world could, it actually sloshed well water, made it raise several feet, like 3 feet. And it,
really?
Yeah, it kept bouncing around in the wells for several hours. And
really?
It was,
and where did you get this info?
This was in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and they mentioned that they,
So you've got an actual hard copy of the newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
Is there
yeah.
any chance you could look that story up and email it to me?
Yeah, I could try and do that.
If you go to their website, they might have it. That's really fascinating. I mean, the other side of the world.
I know, and it just floored me because it said that the shockwave travels through the Earth at 7,400 miles an hour.
Huh.
And then apparently was strong enough to slosh the well water here for, you know, several hours.
That is astounding. I know tsunamis go about 500 miles an hour. I mean, I've learned more than I guess I wanted to know about tsunamis, like we all have since this began. But that's amazing. The other side of the world.
Right.
Okay. If you can, I'd very much appreciate it. By the way, if you want to get hold of me, there are two ways. I am Art Bell, ArtBell at AOL.com or ArtBell at Mindspring.com. Both. And by the way, when you write, understand that my email addresses have been, you know, open email addresses now for 10 or 15 years. So because of that fact, I may be one of the greatest spam collection points in the entire universe. And so I get a lot of it. And put something in the subject line that will grab my attention and in some way perhaps assure me it is not spam, because, you know, I get, oh, I don't know, 1,500 messages a day typically, and I have to sort of use a system of triage to read. Otherwise, I'd never get through it. So put something in the header that grabs my attention. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, I called because I had a theory. I don't know if it's, you know, if it's concrete or anything, but
well, I won't know until I hear it.
They said that there was an because of the earthquake, that the Earth wobbled on its axis.
On its axis, yes.
Right, and I'm thinking that maybe that's because that's why we're having all the storms that we're having now.
Hmm.
Because it seems like they came like right after that happened.
I listen. I don't think so, and I'll give you my reasoning. Yes, in fact. We changed time slightly. It was a millionth of a second or, you know, a thousandth of a second or some portion of a second, which, if it were to continue, would eventually require the scientists, as, by the way, they are required to do every now and then anyway, add a leap second to the year. And the Earth apparently or allegedly moved on its axis about an inch. But that's well within the confines of the normal wobble. There's a kind of a wobble to the Earth, and it's far more than an inch, but they were able to detect that. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just have a comment about the relationship between Dr. Bose experiment that he did back
I'm,
in the...
I'm morning. Sorry, Dr. Who?
Bose speakers.
Okay.
Their slogan is better sound through research.
Yes, uh-huh.
And Dr. Bose made a machine and hooked it to a plant and found out that the earth has a heartbeat. And he recognized it. He held it up to an EKG, and it mimicked an EKG.
Well, so, I don't think the earth actually has a heartbeat, sir, so to speak. But it does have a sort of a resonance vibration at a very low frequency. I wonder if that's what he meant.
It's a vibrational frequency, and the vibrational frequency is also intercellular in our bodies.
Uh-huh. Well, that would make sense all the way around. I mean, we are creatures of this earth, right? And so anything the earth is doing, we are part of, and we are influenced by. And I think that's where a lot of Native American lore comes from, and I think a very great deal of it is true. As they look back on it, they find scientific evidence for a lot of Native American lore for exactly that reason, because it was true. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art, how are you this evening?
Quite well. Where are you?
I'm in Hazleton, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And I wanted to share a little story kind of concerning the weather, but with a little twist to it.
Sure.
We've been having some nasty weather out this way for some time, last few days with a lot of rain. It's been a lot warmer than your typical January, mixed with a little bit of ice and just all kinds of nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I work in a restaurant right on Interstate 80, right outside of the Pocono area. And, well, tonight our power went out because of that. We even saw the transformer go.
Oh.
And so, obviously, we closed down early. And afterwards, you know, the guys and I were sitting around talking about it and whatnot. And started talking about, oh, it's kind of strange here at night, you know, when it's dark and people are here late and whatnot. We started talking about the supposed ghosts that haunt the place.
Uh-huh.
And not too long after that, we started, you know, telling a little bit of stories about it. And before you know it, boom, the power's back on.
And you think the stories brought it back on?
Well, I don't know. It was kind of strange because, as I say, we actually saw the transformer go.
Yes.
There wasn't time for things to be fixed.
Oh, I see. I see. All right. Well, maybe there was, who knows, when you talk of those things, you open doors. And maybe a cosmic lineman popped through and fixed your problem. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. I'm Sandy Gonzalez. I'm Sandy, and I'm in Pensacola, Florida.
Okay, Sandy. Almost spit out your last name, didn't you?
Almost did. Okay. What I wanted to say was we have the black mold that is affecting our soybeans.
Oh, yes.
We have 90 acres right now in Florida, a lot of Alabama, but also our agriculture said that it would be affecting the Midwest by planting time next year.
And what does this black mold do?
It kills the leaves on the soybean.
Well, soybean would be a very, very important crop.
Yes, it is. We also have some acres here in Florida that has black mold in the cotton.
Really?
And they can no longer plant cotton on these acres.
Really?
Yes.
Do they give you any idea of what's bringing it on?
They have no idea.
No idea.
No.
So this black mold, I mean, is it like, there was a time when in the American Southwest, of all places, because it's generally dry here,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't think you would get mold, but there was mold all over the place, and it was in the headlines for a while. Now you're telling me it's in the soybean crops.
It's in the soybean crops.
I wonder if it's the same kind of black mold.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Well, that's, and how much of the country do you think is now affected?
Most of South Alabama, parts of Florida around Pensacola and Milton.
Right.
That's all being affected. And they were just saying that it would move by next planting season to the Midwest.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, there's something to be concerned about. When you begin to hear about mold or new blight of some sort that's affecting a major crop that we grow here in the U.S., you want to pay attention to that. Haven't heard that one in the headlines, but there she was. What's to the Rockies? You're on the air. Hello.
Hi. I wanted to know if you can interview Patch Adams again.
Oh, it's been a while. Patch was something else to interview. Wasn't he something?
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about a series about pathologizing every kind of human behavior.
Uh-huh. All right. I'll see what I can do.
Thank you.
All right. You're very welcome. First-time caller line. You're on the air. Hi.
Art Bell, Steve from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Hello, Steve.
I wanted to talk about that movie White Noise.
Okay. Well, you'd never hear any voices on this phone line of yours, buddy. Crackle, crunch. You ought to hear all the noise on it.
Oh, sorry about that. One thing about that movie that just didn't sit well with me toward the end, the idea that the spirits...
No, wait. Don't tell the end of a movie. Never tell the end of a movie, sir. That's nasty.
Oh, dang.
No, never tell the end.
Let me phrase it in a question that's not going to spoil the end.
Listen, what did you think of the movie overall?
Overall, it was interesting. I felt that a few parts were exaggerated. One thing, when you did the show and you had guests doing the show about White Noise, they never really said anything about spirits with evil intent.
Yes, well, okay, thank you very much. I think that all of these things underdo the possibility of evil intent. And for some reason, we always, almost automatically assume these are warm, fuzzy little creatures, or they're warm, fuzzy with nothing but good intent and the very best for us, because after all, they're smart, they can communicate across the barrier to the other side or to other star systems or whatever. Well, I've always been very cautious about this kind of thing, and I think it's at least 50% possible that whoever these people are, whether they're from the other side of the veil or the other side of the cosmos, they may well not have our best interests in mind. Something you should keep locked away in the back of your brain someplace, especially when you hear of attempts to transmit to ETs or to the other side, for that matter. Just be careful out there. Coming up on the other side of the news, Dr. Michio Kaku, one of America's brightest physicists.
Now, the mist across the window hides the light. But nothing hides the color of the lights that shine. Electricity is so fine.